May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. When I first read Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of 2 Corinthians 6, I was especially taken by this reference he makes to wide open, spacious life. What a lovely description of promised life in God's beloved community. Now, I'll admit that my silly side immediately wanted to begin the sermon today with a rousing chorus of Don't Fence Me In. You know, the Cole Porter song which Roy Rogers croons, "Oh, give me land, lots of land, under starry skies above. Don't fence me in, let me ride to the wide open spaces that I love. Don't fence me in." Well, fortunately for you, my silly side was overcome by a more serious side, which insisted that this may not be a time for levity. Oh, I wish it was. How I wish it was. But after another week of embarrassing tweets, twisted public pronouncements, heart-breaking images of violence, the ravages of war, judicial attacks on the national safety net for human beings and human well-being, and ugly proclamations of outrageous dishonesty and dehumanization, it's hard to let anything evoke laughter, as much as we might want it or need it. Two of the lectionary texts for this week are familiar dramatic stories. One is that Sunday school tale from 2 Samuel about the epic battle between David and Goliath. The other is Jesus calming the waters on the stormy lake to the wonder and relief of his terrified disciples. But I was especially drawn to this powerful psalm. We actually had it in two parts today in paraphrases, Psalm 9, and to Paul's reflection on his ongoing struggle with the church in Corinth. It's interesting as well as significant and timely, perhaps, that all these texts deal in some sense with terror. I've already observed that the poor disciples were terrified of drowning in the roiling, wind-whipped waters of Lake Galilee. Clearly, King Saul and the whole army of Israel were greatly intimidated by the colossal Philistine warrior Goliath. To a man, they were all terrified of taking him on in mortal combat. The psalmist laments, "You cry over the nations, seeing how they destroy one another. Chaos and darkness rise up, blind to love's way. Forgotten is creation's glory. False power seeks to destroy the divine plan." The psalmist and the children of Israel lived in perilous times, times of terror. They were a small nation, an insignificant people on the world stage, a political football to be kicked around among the great powers of their time. Little wonder that they cultivated a notion of God who was always with them, their stronghold, their salvation. Of course, this vision necessitated that they also be with God, which they struggled with all of their long history. And as a faith community, do we not struggle with it yet today? How is it that we are called to be God's people, and how do we live that out in our own times of terror? Ironically, Paul had suffered many hardships, shipwreck, imprisonment, beatings, hunger, ridicule, but he was particularly afraid that he could not heal this rift with the Corinthian Christians. He was terrified that they might be lost to the gospel. So it seems ironic that in his terror that Paul would write to the Christians about wide open, spacious life. Yet that's exactly what Paul most desired that the church at Corinth would find. Perhaps Paul was remembering Psalm 9 when the psalmist sings, "Yet love will abide forever. You have established yourself in secret places, seeking out receptive hearts, ready to enter and make your dwelling place within." As beautiful and profound as these words are, sometimes it's hard to see how they apply to our current situation. It even becomes difficult to believe that God's love will abide forever, generating wide open, spacious life for God's creation. We feel like that frightened army of Israel. We join in crying over the nations, seeing how they destroy one another. We feel the chaos and the darkness rise up, blind to love's way. It seems that creation's glory is forgotten, and false power seeks to destroy the divine plan. We're in that same boat with Jesus and the disciples as they chide Jesus, "Teacher, teacher, do you not care that we perish?" We fear we may never enter into wide open, spacious life, that of Paul's longing. It all seems so hopeless, impossible. Each day's news and the following social media flurry drags us lower and lower and lower. I guess I could leave it there. Tell you to go home, go to bed, and pull the covers over your head. I know there are days when I find it challenging to get up in the morning. But I also know that I cannot live like that. It isn't the thing I committed myself to when I accepted God's call to ministry. I hear Jesus' challenge to his disciples. "Why are you afraid? Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And I, like them, am caught short. I must leave my pity party behind. It's time to sing with the psalmist, "Please, God, let me have your grace, for you see what I have to put up with. You lift me up from the jaws of death. To you I am able to sing praises. In the company of the daughters of faith, I will celebrate your liberation given so freely." I catch Paul's chiding message from the heart of his own dis-ease. I imagine he's preaching as much to himself as he is to the Corinthians when he writes, "Now is the right time to listen, the day to be helped. Now, in these difficult days, in this time of terror, don't put it off," he exhorts. "Don't frustrate God's work by showing up late, throwing a question mark over everything we're doing. Our work as God's servants gets validated or not in the details." You know that old expression, "The devil is in the details, but so is the Holy One." Friends, little things matter. Don't underestimate your gifts. It matters that we show up, and it matters that we faithfully do what we can. People are watching us as we stay at our post, alertly, unswervingly, in hard times, tough times, bad times, when we're beaten up, jailed, and mobbed, working hard, working late, working without eating, with pure heart, clear head, steady hand, in gentleness, holiness, and honest love. When we're telling the truth, and when God's showing God's power, when we're doing our best, setting things right, when we're praised and when we're blamed, slandered and honored, true to our word, though distrusted, ignored by the world, but recognized by God, terrifically alive, though rumored to be dead, beaten within an inch of our lives, but refusing to die, immersed in tears, yet always filled with deep joy, living on handouts, yet enriching many, having nothing, having it all. Whew. That's exhausting. And yet that's Paul's story, and he's sticking to it. Friends, I can't say it better. There is this wide open, spacious life spelled out for us. The life in which we open receptive hearts to make a dwelling place for God's steadfast love. It's ours for the claiming. Wonderful as it promises to be, no one ever said it would be easy, that it would come without a cost. See, here's the challenge for us. If we don't speak up for justice and righteousness, for truth, for peace, for welcome, who will? The outcome is not in our hands, but as followers of Christ, we must account for our own faith or lack thereof. In a document entitled Reclaiming Jesus, a Confession of Faith, a group of faith leaders proclaimed, God calls us to protect and seek justice for those who are poor and vulnerable, and our treatment of people who are oppressed, strangers, outsiders, and otherwise considered marginal is a test of our relationship to God, who made us all equal in divine dignity and love. God will be our God, but we must choose to be God's people. That's how relationship works. Is this gospel for us the word we must proclaim, God's good news? Is this the road to wide open, spacious life? Now more than ever is the time, right now, when the need is overwhelming and we're feeling maybe so small. Now is the time to step up and proclaim good news, for none of us is free until all of us are free. There is no wide open, spacious life for me if it's not also available to you and to all God's varied people. On the floor of the cathedral, Oscar Romero laid down his life for his God, for his faith, and for his suffering people. Trusting God's steadfast love and believing the arc of the moral universe bends inevitably toward justice, he claimed that a church that doesn't provoke any crises, a gospel that doesn't unsettle, a word of God that doesn't get under anyone's skin, a word that doesn't touch the real sin of the society in which it is being proclaimed. What gospel is that? Indeed, what gospel? There is a cost to discipleship. Faithful following does not promise easy street. Standing for what is right takes backbone and perseverance. Maya Angelou tells us that courage is the most important of all the virtues, because without courage, you can't practice any other virtue consistently. Well, little David went up against the giant with only a slingshot and 5 smooth stones. Maybe he was naive and foolish. But he also believed that the God who saved me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will save me from the hand of this Philistine. The psalmist trusted that those who know you put their trust in you. Seekers will never be left forlorn. Jesus believed that the disciples were capable of enough faith that they could calm the sea, heal the sick, feed the hungry, and speak God's truth to power. Paul's courage in the face of adversity was legendary. This, friends, is our heritage and our inspiration. This is our faith tradition. So let's not squander one bit of this marvelous life that God has given us, this wide open, spacious life of challenge and promise. Open up your lives. Live openly and expansively. As impossible as it might seem, now is the time.